presently working on his first feature film at the age of 34. Robin's a dear friend for a number of years, and so let's give these guests a proper welcome. Each of them will have a period of 10 to 12 minutes to tell us two things. First, they will tell us what they do for a living, what their career is all about. And second, they will tell us a little bit about how they try to make their particular career count for Christ. And then after we've gone through each one of those, then there will be a time for questions and answers. There will be a time at the conclusion of chapel for those who would have some time this afternoon to be able to sign up for some personal time or small group time with one or more of these men. And the sign-ups would be where? Over here on a table? Is that where we do that? Yes, over here on the table. Good. For those of you who do not have class immediately following, if there are a lot of questions coming, we might be able to stay over for a few extra minutes. But for those of you, especially who do have class, you would still have that opportunity to spend some time this afternoon. Robin Armstrong will have to leave rather early.
Bob, we're none of us are going to be able to stay very long, so we're going to have to do the sign up and personal stuff immediately following.
Okay, and also, I've just gotten a newsflash right in. All three of these fellas are going to have to leave fairly soon after chapel and could take some appointments immediately, maybe the first hour, right? And then we'll have to leave. And so we'll try to make that time count as best we can. We're going to go alphabetically so that Robin Armstrong won't be disappointed. When your name is Armstrong, you've always been first your whole life, except when there are Andersons there, he told me. So we're going to begin with Robin Armstrong.
Am I supposed to pick this mic up and put it
on? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, there are mics there.
I just didn't know.
Forgive me. There are lapel mics there. I didn't brief you properly. I guess I just took for granted that the media people knew more about that than
always
I did.
Forgive
so
me.
I didn't say that.
My name is Robin Armstrong. I'm from Phoenix, Arizona. Anybody from Phoenix? Okay. Oh, good. Paradise Valley High School, class of 1972. I was born at a very early age, actually, my film career started in high school, believe it or not. In the 1970s, most of the high schools, public high schools around the country, started diverting into other courses than the three R's and more creative type courses. And there was one rather imaginative teacher at my high school who taught a film course, and it was called Film and the Filmmaker. Now, at that time, I had been bitten by the acting bug and been involved in music for a long time, and I decided to see what this was all about. I took this course, and I found that at that time, drugs was making its way into school, and there was a propensity on the part of most of the people who signed up for the class to treat it as just an easy credit, if any of you can relate to that, and as an opportunity to get a movie camera and go, you know, shoot funny things, people pretending like they were doing drugs and all that kind of stuff. And nobody really took the class seriously, although the intent was to teach a little film history, a little film theory, and some practicum on film technique. But I took the class very seriously because I was always a very Lord blessed me with an aggressiveness that I've always had, and I tried to make the time count. So I got out of that, and then immediately, since I had certain talents in the sales and marketing area that were beginning to make themselves apparent to me, I began to hustle little local television commercials in Phoenix. And it was not because I was the best, and it was not because I was the most talented, but because I was the cheapest. And I remember the first commercial I made was for a company that a guy who owned a chain of jewelry stores, and I told him that the commercial he was running on the air was no good, and that for $250, I'd be able to make a better television commercial for him. We went over budget by $15, but what we did was I wrote this commercial, I acted in it, I got my girlfriend to act in it with me, and basically we recognized that their section of the market was very high-end, and that most people who were interested in a small engagement ring, you know, college-age people who were just getting interested in getting engaged and getting married, didn't have the money to spend on extravagant things. So the commercial ended up being quite successful, and I used that to get another and went to every advertising agency in town who didn't have a lot of money to spend and began to build up a reel. And then I found out that the mother of a very famous film director lived in Scottsdale, which is a suburb of Phoenix, and her name was Herma Bogdanovich. Now, if any of you have ever heard of Peter Bogdanovich, he's a very well-known film director, directed films such as Last Picture Show, Paper Moon, Mask, What's Up Doc, and so forth, and is now in Texas doing Last Picture Show 2, 17 years later. But I kind of found a way to get a hold of her phone number, sort of razzle-dazzled her a little bit into an impression that I was not going to be a psychopath. I was an ordinary person, and anybody who's got a name is always very, 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 very protective of themselves, and so you have to sort of strategize, how am I going to approach this person and have them be not threatened. Anyway, we became friends, and as a result, she introduced me to her son, Peter. I came over to California on January 6, 1976, to do an apprenticeship with Peter Bogdanovich on a film he was doing at that time, which probably none of you have ever heard of because it flopped, called Nickelodeon. I think one or two of you might have seen it. Anyway, at 3 in the morning. Anyway, I worked on that apprenticeship. I was 21, and I did it for about 3 months, and then went back to my in-between assignments job, which was waiting tables at a local restaurant, trying to get jobs on the side. And I was always very envious of my friends, because my friends were making $800 a month or $900 a month working at some ordinary job and trying to squeeze out an hour or two in the evening to work on something that they wanted to do. Me, on the other hand, I was working at night and probably making $500 or $600 a month and spending 50% of my salary on phone bills and stationery and a typing service, trying to get little projects generated out of my studio apartment in North Hollywood. And after doing a number of projects, little projects which graduated to bigger projects, I began to do a television talk show for cable with Art Linkletter, which we created and produced and did for 4 years. And was able, through actually a friend who I met in one of those restaurants, who has been my partner now for 11 years, we were able to generate the basis for a media company in film, television, and film, television commercials and publishing, until along came a major company called Harcourt Brace Yovanovitch, which publishes probably some of the textbooks some of you may have seen or used, and offered to buy us out for a substantial amount of money, so that we were now in a position to move forward in other independent pursuits. Having looked at all of this preceding activity as a precursor to and a stepping stone to film, feature films, then I began on a course trying to find a first screenplay. Now, any of you who have thought about it may realize that when you go to the movie theater, probably 80% or 85% of what you see is unacceptable for the Christian viewer. And I went through a personal period of struggle and difficulty trying to find out exactly how I felt about all of those difficult issues. What can you portray on screen? What can't you? What can you be right in your conscience before God about, and what can you not? Having dealt almost exclusively in the secular area, I was now transformed from the world of, you know, trying to make a ball-peen hammer look attractive to a commercial audience, to now attempting to create human drama. And of course, human drama involves evil, it involves protagonists, antagonists, it involves problems, obstacles over which characters must overcome. And it immediately, you have all the issues of language and violence and all of the things that go along with that. So after trying to carefully reconcile all of that, a script, and reading hundreds and hundreds of pages of material for over months and months and months, a script came to my attention through a mutual friend. It was written by a major name writer, but it was written 18 years ago at the very beginning of his career. And it was a wonderful script, but obviously when you see a screenplay, you must filter it through the eyes not of what it is, but of what it can be as a Christian. And So after about four rewrites, we are now in position. We will be shooting, well, I should say that last year I spent the entire year raising about $1 million to make this picture. And that's very low budget. The average studio motion picture this year in Hollywood is $16.7 million. And this is going to be about a $1 million picture. But it is one that will allow me to go forward and be proud. Although I must confess, I just got a set of rewrites back a couple of days ago from the writer who lives up in Washington State saying, this stays, don't take this out, don't take this out. I doubt that this could offend you or your Lord, etc., etc. And obviously I have this sort of twisting feeling in the pit of my stomach that I'm going to have a phone conversation with this guy. But ultimately, since I bought the rights to the screenplay, it is my right to change it any way I want. And I think one of the reasons that I wanted to become a director-producer is because the only way a Christian can go forward and do positive things, I believe, is if, in terms of the actual generation of the project, is if he wants to be proud of what he works on and also be able to have steady employment, he needs to be in some sort of a position of control over what he's doing. There is just not enough quality material to sustain a career going from one project to the next where you can just hop onto this project and hop onto this without being in some position of control. So what we're going to deal with this morning, I think, we come from three different positions. Rick is in a very enviable position for probably many of you. He's on a staff position. Ken is in a freelance position and moving more toward generation of projects, and I'm in the generating of projects. But when you generate projects, you don't have the organization to back you up, so there can be some highs and lows in terms of knowing that the whole thing is on your shoulders. This project, I think, has taught me a lot, even before we've shot it, just in terms of the some of the slimy things that you see people doing and some of the people you have to deal with and the way you have to rise above that in your testimony. Tell me when I'm done with my time. You're gonna let me know. I got a couple of minutes. Sharing Christ, I have learned over the past 10, 15 years, is not a matter of walking up to a person saying, "Hi, do you know Jesus?" For me, in the industry in which I have to work with people over and over again. And we must demonstrate a godly lifestyle, godly character, and when the opportunity presents itself, when the opening presents itself, we need to speak a word about Christ and use that progressively as we go. I have found a long time ago that if you try to unload the gospel on somebody early on, you'll create a rift in a relationship if the person is not ready to receive what you have to say. And that requires some wisdom and some perception. And obviously, God needs to do a work on the heart to prompt that salvation before that person will ever be ready anyway. But as we move forward on this project, I must, you know, I don't have terribly optimistic things to say, and I told this to Bob on the phone. From where I sit, which is different than some of you, you may be thinking about, well, I'm going to go out and get a job and work for a studio. Or I'm going to go out and get a job and work for an agency, or go out and get a job and work for a production company. But those decisions will trickle down to you also, because take, for example, you're working at Universal Studios and a film like The Last Temptation of Christ comes out. Are you going to quit? Are you going to stay there and try to be salt and light? Are you going to stay there and keep your mouth shut? How are you going to respond to those types of things? I mean, it is a given that a high percentage of every product that is affiliated with every major film entity, and I'm talking about film, I know this is really broader with media, there's TV and there's radio and publishing and all the rest, but in terms of film, there are some significant problems that need to be thought through, and the most important thing I would say is you have to know what you believe. And you have to be firmly grounded and know exactly how you feel. If your standards are floating to the degree that you can be influenced, I don't mean influenced for Christ by godly men, but I mean influenced by your environment, then you're in very dangerous water. And I feel that as I look at, this sort of film as a metaphor for a career, I'm not exactly sure how many more films I want to make. And the reason for this is that there seems just to be, and this is the thing I will continually harp on, there is a fundamental, foundational contradiction in terms between popularity and integrity, or popularity and quality. Jesus told us to take the narrow way. And the reason they put him on the cross is because he did not meet with popular opinion, and his message does not meet with popular opinion today. And for us to assume, perhaps naively, that we can just go forward and make a blast for Christ, although anything is possible in the Spirit's power, I've got to say that when you talk about film or television, which draws its power, its money, its resources, all from the basic notion of popularity, whether it's rating points or box office dollars, and then you stand that up against someone who has a higher standard, a heavenly standard, that does not square with popularity, does not meet with popularity, does not even care about popularity, but cares about staying true to the truths of the Word of God, you will inevitably have a conflict. And that conflict, I don't think, will ever come out on the side of Christ as an industry. I think that the most we can expect is just that as Christians, we are trying to spread as much light as we can in a dark world. The Scriptures don't tell us that this world is ultimately going to completely go to light, but that this world is going to be destroyed for another world. So we want to try to make impact, but the question that I'm currently struggling with, and that all of you would want to probably struggle with if you take it seriously, is it conceivable that there are certain areas of human endeavor, or certain subcategories of human endeavor in terms of careers, that are not cut out for Christians? I'll give you one quick example and then I'll close because I'm getting late. Can a Christian, and by the way, you're not going to get categorical answers from me on this, so don't try to pin me down, you'll have to come up with your own, but can a Christian own and operate a chain of movie theaters or a secular bookstore? Now, in operating a chain of movie theaters, you have two things to consider. If you're independently wealthy and can afford to subsidize a theater chain when it's not showing films because you can't find anything that is quality enough to show, then maybe you can own a chain of movie theaters. But if in the process of owning a chain of movie theaters, if you realize that one quality project or one film that you feel that you want to be part of presenting comes along every 6 months, 9 months, a year, you've got to fill those seats the rest of the year in order to make it an economically viable enterprise, and you're putting yourself in the position of having to fill those seats with less than acceptable movie fare just to keep going. So I would have a big question about that as a career. Can a Christian who wants to honor God do that? Same with a bookstore. If you want to own a secular bookstore, if you walk into a B. Dalton's today and you look at probably 20-30% of the titles in there, whether they be directly anti-God titles or just New Age and other kinds of material that you wouldn't want to be associated with, but yet those are the hot-selling topics. Can you cut that segment out of the bookstore and be able to sell your normal, the types of books you'd want to be affiliated with, and still make a living? Well, those are very good questions, and they're ones that are on the minds of all of us here and everyone who's in media who wants to honor Christ. Anyway, that's just a little bit, and we'll get the rest in questions.
Thank you very much, Robin, for that keen insight. Next, we'll have Rick Dempsey.
One thing about the media is, as you can tell, you don't have to wear a tie. We were up in the top room and got all the executives from the business department, and they're all suited up. And then I look at these guys, and I go, these guys must be with the media department. So, yeah, until you get into the executive levels, you can dress pretty casually. just a little bit about myself. I did graduate from the Master's College. I grew up in a Christian family.
I accepted the Lord when I was 4.5 years of age. My mom led me to the Lord at a Good News Club, which was a child evangelism type thing for the neighborhood. And did a lot of singing as a child. I sang a little backup for Carlos Santana on one of his albums before my voice changed. And as a little kid and screaming at the top of my lungs. And I really had a desire for the entertainment industry. I didn't know why. Used to watch the old movie musicals, West Side Story, and those kind of things. And I go, man, that's cool, you know. The Jets and the whatever they were, the two gangs that were fighting. They're, you know, watching Mary Poppins. The stuff just fascinated me as a kid. And I thought, you know, that's something that I'd really like to go into is the media. And the Lord directed my life in that area as I continued to sing, and then my voice changed, and then that career went down the tubes. So I didn't stop singing, but I continued my pursuit in the entertainment industry, and shortly out of high school, I joined a company called Deke Enterprises, and they're a animation firm, and they do children's programming. And my struggle was with, like he was saying, was that where do you take the stand? How do you go into a field or a network that is so heathen? It's the stuff out there is just trash, and so that was really a struggle with me. And I said, hey, can I be a Christian and do this? And so my resolution to that was to go into children's programming. So, and maybe see if we can clean up, get some of the G.I. Joe stuff off the screen and get something that might be a little more uplifting to our children. So I started at Deke Enterprise, started as a runner. I ran the office errands. I took scripts to people, that kind of stuff, driving my car around. And I did that while I went through college. And I did that for 3 months. And I got promoted to a talent coordinator. And what a talent does is all the voices for a particular cartoon need to be directed. The script needs to be interpreted. So I kind of got involved in that department and basically just coordinated the talent. And through that, I met someone who worked for Disney, and I worked with him a bit. And he started his own department at Disney, which is who I work for now. And he pulled me over there. And it's the department that's in charge of all the voices. Last year, there were 7 Mickey Mouses out there doing different talking, and all of them sounded different, and there was no consistency. And a company like Disney is real big on consistency and stuff like that. So they've developed this department. So it's myself and my boss. There's 2 of us under Roy Disney's supervision. And we are in charge of all the voices for the entire company, just to make sure they stay consistent, whether it's for Disneyland, whether it's for the new Euro Disneyland in Europe, whether it's for Walt Disney World or something on the Disney Channel or a feature movie. It comes through us. So that's kind of what we do. But what I'd really like to tell you is just basically how I view my job. It's like I said, it is a heathen industry. I'm pretty protected being at Disney because it is a family-oriented company. I mean, they've done some pretty straggly things from time to time, but for the most part, they are a family entertainment company, and they try to keep their morals up. With the establishment of the new Touchstone Pictures, I think that we have degraded that name a little, but I'm working on a proposal to change that, and hopefully I can present that to some of the executives and see if we can clean up the act over there. But my whole idea is to hopefully as I go up and work my way up the ladder even further, I hope that I can have an influence on the entertainment industry and establish a whole new set of morals. I mean, to me, that would be ideal, is to set a whole new standard of morals where you have a production company that's putting out good quality films, something like A Chariots of Fire or some other. There aren't too many movies out there that are real morally strong, but a type of film that would come under a label that would possibly a Disney label that would keep high moral standings and set the standard for the industry. So I look forward to doing that in the future, hopefully moving up in that area. But the way I view work is I believe it's more of a mission field. Some people are called to South Africa. Some people are called to Haiti. Some people are called to the Kingdom of Tonga. I feel I was called to the Magic Kingdom. And That has become my mission field, and that's how I look at that. Every day, I look forward to going to work because I will get to meet new people, some of them movie stars, and just have a little impact in their lives and maybe present Christ to them. And through a testimony, I can share my faith with others. I'm not a real stick a guy in a corner, take him out to lunch, stick him at a corner and preach at him for 30 minutes. That's just not my style. Some people are great that way and are a little more evangelical. I prefer to just live a consistent lifestyle, have a little integrity throughout my working day, and make sure I don't compromise in any area. I think through that, people come up to me and they say, "Yeah, you're a little different. How come?" Or I get a chance to share with them that Sundays are very important to me. I can't do anything on the weekends, go drinking with a bunch of the guys from work on the weekend, first of all, because I'm married. Oh, by the way, I met my wife here at the Master's College, so there is hope for some of you guys out there. And anyways, but that I told them that I couldn't, Sundays are very important to me, and through that, I express that I go to Grace Community Church and can often invite them to church, or especially to the, since it is a media field, that I like to, I've brought some people to the spring concerts and to the Christmas concerts, that kind of thing, down at the church. Just a way of bringing them to church, but I think that gives me an opportunity to witness and to share with them, because they start asking questions. Well, why can't you do this? Why can't you go drinking with us? Why can't you take off on Sunday? Or why can't you come into work on Sunday? And I'm very adamant about, that I need to be at church. And do that, you get a chance to share and share your testimony with them. One thing that I think is real important is that as you go into this media field, as we talked over here, I went for a more amiable position where I get a steady paycheck. In the media, there is a lot of freelance work going on. You're either writing scripts, you're working as support crew for a filming. Those are all different areas, and those you have to go project per project basis. I went on into a studio as a staff position, which is starting out could be very good advice, only because you get a steady paycheck. And sometimes you get laid off because production gets slow. But that is an area where the three of us will differ a little, in that there's we've got where you build a project and make that project work. We have freelance work, and then a staff paid person. In closing, I'd just like to tell you how the Lord is using me a little. Then I'll wrap things up. But I think the Lord has used me in a way of just holding integrity where I am now. I enjoy what I do, and I think people can see that. And through that, I'm able to share my testimony with various people and to share Christ with them. And I have an example of one reason why I think the Lord has got me where I am right now. I don't know if any of you know Graham McNay. He is a missionary from, actually Tonga, originally from New Zealand. And he's down at the seminary right now, at the Master's Seminary, and he's here just to study God's Word. And he has a little boy, Gene, who's 9 years old. And Gene is in the juniors department at Grace Church, and I'm the shepherd of the second hour at juniors department at Grace. And Gene is one of my little guys. He's got this real thick New Zealand accent. He says, "Hey, mate, what's going on?" He's a real cute kid. Just love him to death. And we're doing a new film over at Disney called The Rescuers Down Under. And it's a sequel to the Rescuers movie, and it takes place down in Australia. And they were looking for a little boy, ages 8 to 10, who had a New Zealand accent. They sent out this casting call all across the United States. Didn't come up with anybody. And all of a sudden it hit me. I go, "Wait a minute, I got this kid in my Sunday school class." So I brought him in. He got the part, so he'll be recording that part in just a few weeks. And he will get a good chunk of money out of that, and needless to say. And it looks like Graham is going to be able to stay with the help of that money that Gene gets from that. He will be able to stay an extra semester in seminary instead of having to go back. So that was really neat to be a part of that. And so I think, just for that in itself, that's a good way that the Lord is using me in getting other Christians incorporated into the media field. And right now, as all of you, some of you may have jobs. I don't care where it is. I don't care if it's at Jack in the Box. I don't care if it's at a sports shop or whatever you're doing. That job is important. You need to uphold your integrity every day. You can't slack off. As a Christian, you cannot slack off, because you will you'll get trapped if you're influenced by those around you, the non-Christians, I mean. Then you can fall easily, and I don't care where you are. You cannot slack off, and you need to hold your integrity and just be a testimony and let your light so shine. All right. Okay.
Thank you, Rick. Do you do voice characterizations yourself?
I did Bam Bam for the Flintstones when I was a little kid. Just his singing voice on a couple specials. But other than that, no.
Okay. Thank you very much. That was great. Yeah. You want to hear Bam Bam? What? They want to hear some Bam Bam.
That was the singing voice. And it was before the voice changed. And you remember when the voice changed, the career went downhill. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Next, let's hear from Ken Johnson. So glad to have you here, Ken.
How about you guys, huh? I'm getting restless up here. I started out in Texas. Anybody from Texas? I know they got more than Arizona. There you go. How about that football team? We really had a tough time, I tell you. I hope you guys are playing for Tom Landry. Like Rick and I don't know Robin for certain, I was raised in a Christian home. And I think probably if there's anything that I can tell that we have in common up here is there's a bit of show-off or showmanship in people who are, quote, creative or interested in the media. And I think probably as early as like first grade, I found that if you yelled out something like boogers in class, you would get a laugh. And you would get in trouble. And because I was born a sinner, I like both of those things. You know, I like a good laugh and trouble. So, and that is sort of a microcosm of the entertainment industry. Say something ugly and everyone will laugh, and you're in trouble with God. So early on, I was indoctrinated in the faith, and like Rick, got involved in music, and never did get a haircut.
Ma'am?
Cut it out, Robin. Robin and I know each other, but that's my problem.
We're like this.
And basically, I really enjoyed coming up with things. If you read Calvin and Hobbes, most of you probably relate to that little kid if you're interested in this industry, because you're always fantasizing and thinking of things that you might do or might get in trouble for. And so at a very early age, I found I really liked this. The other thing that really I was drawn to was the ministry. And maybe that had to do, I know Charles Spurgeon said that every preacher ought to have a little bit of an actor in him so that he could bring it off. As you can see, more preachers have acting in them now than they do have scripture. But all that to say that by the time I got out of high school, I played in a few bands and did music for a while. Again, liked the stage, liked to perform. But something was really troubling me, and so I decided that the point of departure came was when I was attending a Southern Baptist church all my life. And I finally one Sunday went to an independent Baptist church where the preacher taught expositionally. And I'd never heard expositional preaching. I'd only heard very topical, basically evangelistic sermons. And if you come from that background, you know that generally every Sunday there's an altar call. And once you're saved, I mean, it's just exercise. You know, just running down there to rededicate or some other. Some other extra biblical idea. I mean, and you also found that if there was something on your heart leading you in some way to say, well, I want to serve God, you could be a missionary, a song leader, or a preacher. And then maybe you could be a youth guy if your hair was long enough and you could play guitar. So none of those things really appealed to me. However, because of I shouldn't say they didn't appeal to me, but I did not feel a real calling. And when I was saved, I distinctly felt the calling of the Holy Spirit. I felt His regenerating power in my life, and I couldn't say that that was being affirmed to me. So basically, this expositional preaching began to really pierce me and began to pierce my life, and I wanted to be like these men. I mean, Bob was talking about role models. And the men who were preaching the Word of God in such an existential fashion, I wanted to be like that. I wanted to be able to rightly divide the Word. So I packed up and went to Dallas Bible College. And it's funny, Robin said he spent the last year raising $1 million, and Rick was talking about this guy making a lot of money just to get through seminary. I mean, you guys could probably make a couple of films with just your tuitions here, but... we're trying to do something about that. The reason I say that is because I was talking to Annette earlier, and it's very hard. So I went off to Bible college and kept my hand in. At the time, I was doing illustrations on the side. I was a cartoonist for several magazines and just trying to make extra money. And eventually I left Bible college and returned to, at this point, Oklahoma City, started working for ad agencies as an illustrator, and then started writing for them. I mean, just finding, as Robin did, that in a local market, frequently you could find some stuff that's pretty poorly done. And either it's an innate gift, or I don't know what it is, but the Lord seems to give you the ability to perceive what's funny, what's not funny, what's creative, what's not creative, and people perceive that as well. So I began to write commercials, and then I began to do voices, because I couldn't find anybody to do the voices the way that I wanted them done. So that all got pretty involved. I started doing voices for animation and writing and producing animation. And it was really an enjoyable time. But again, as these guys have mentioned, I was not integrating in most of my dealings. In fact, all of it was more than a secular field. So at that time, I did another stop about face and decided to go to seminary. Decided I needed some more training. So I went to Faith Theological Seminary in Philadelphia, continued to do illustrations, because as these guys can tell you, writing and producing is not something that you can look in the one as and find. So those projects have to usually be divinely brought to you, or you really have to hone that career over many, many years. So after I left seminary, I came back to Oklahoma City. I don't know, it was in the middle of the country. I thought, just stay here, it's safe, it's in the middle. Close to the middle, I guess, Kansas. And again, picked up where I left off. I never at any time had a desire to be in the ministry as a preacher, although I did, and I do feel like the Lord has given me a gift of teaching. So I wanted to be a person who had studied the Scriptures so that I would not be taking that responsibility amiss. So as I began to see the disparity between my work, and I don't mean this in any, there was nothing heinous or evil, it just, I bet basically was pretty frivolous. I mean, anything outside of the gospel just seems frivolous by weight. So I began to evaluate that and thought I would like to come to California. For one thing, I could trade my wares in a big marketplace, really see if I had the capabilities of working in an industry this size and of this caliber. And the other thing was, I wanted to be a part of Grace Community Church, because MacArthur's expositional teaching had a real impact on me.
Dr. MacArthur.
Oh. I call him Johnny.
This one.
where you get the hook. Okay, buddy, that's enough. So anyway. I came out to California on a campaign. I'd written a campaign for a bank there. Ridiculously stupid campaign. As you know, Oklahoma is the place where banks are falling one by one. I'm sure the one I worked for did.
Largely due to that campaign.
That campaign had a lot to do with it. No, it didn't. It was great. It was funny. It was really funny. I can't remember what it was, but I'm sure it was. But basically, I came out here to do the campaign because we needed a voice talent. A lady named June Perret, who does the voice of Rocky the Flying Squirrel and just about every other voice since who knows when, male and female. And she was great, but we couldn't afford her counterpart, who was Bill Scott, who does Bullwinkle and all the other guys. He's since died, but so I was Bullwinkle. Really? Don't laugh, that pays pretty good. Anyway, so I came out and did several of the old Bullwinkle characters for this ad campaign with June. And shortly thereafter, June wrote me a letter in Oklahoma City and said, you should come out here. You know, I really thought your work was very good and on and on. And, you know, I was really enamored. If she'd have been like 20 years younger, I think. It didn't work out well. Okay, 40, all right. But anyway, so I did it. I gave it much prayerful thought, consideration as I was packing. Oh, God. So I came to California. Basically, I got an agent in a very short time doing voice work. And that's very hard to come by, as Rick can tell you, because there's very good people out there doing that. But basically, I wanted to control my own destiny. I'd gotten used to writing and producing on my own. And it was hard. Of course, it's very hard to convince people you can do that. A short time later, I guess in the framework of history, it's a long time if you were like waiting in a doctor's office, but like a year or so. I was contacted by Brenda Robbins, who was putting together a project, and he needed creative people. And I didn't know anybody, so I said, how about me? Now, so we went and brainstormed a little bit, and she's saying something funnier than I am. I hope you have enough of the class. So we went to, had a brainstorming session, and eventually I was hired to create and help produce a live-action animated series. And that's just great. It's been just a tremendous amount of fun. And the main thing is that these people are Christians. And they put out a considerable amount of money to do this project in a first-rate fashion, which is not often the case in Christian projects. I mean, usually it's pretty, as you know, if you've seen any Christian film, it's like,
but I can tell you about the Lord. I mean, it's...
you know, it's sincere, but...
You know. Explain the direction of the book.
So, that's got it.
That's a pretty good film.
I like it. Anyway, I don't mean to mock those efforts. I think something that, and I'd like to touch on this later after I finish this story. So, essentially, they gave us the money to produce this live-action animated series. It's called McGee and Me. It should be out. The first episode should be reaching your store on May 1st. And I mean, you're in a classroom situation all the time. Don't you get that still? No? Girls? We've been working on this project for a little over a year and a half. It's been a tremendous opportunity. I mean, basically the Lord just picked me up and brought me into it. And that is nothing but His sovereign grace. The connection with Focus on the Family, they mentioned that I work for Focus, and that's, I guess, could be true, but basically Focus is presenting the show. Once they saw it, they said, oh, we like that. And, so they're going to be presenting it to the public, and we're really pleased to be associated with that. organization like that. And Tyndale is distributing it. So it's quite a eclectic group, but they're all very committed people. Now, the thing I wanted to touch on in regards to some of the things that have been addressed here is, one, is that you are in a very, very good place to be considering the media. Because the main problem, in my experience, has been is that there are not Christians of substance in this industry. There are plenty of people, I feel, I don't know if there are plenty, but there are a number of those who confess Christ and are sincere. And as I mentioned in the film earlier, you know, that they may be poorly done, but they sincerely want to do good. I hope that's their motive. The other motive may be is that they're determined to be in this industry, even if it isn't the will of God, because of this innate sinfulness we have to show off and to be on and to imagine ourselves as something. But the critical thing that I would pass along to you this morning is be men and women of substance. Be people who know sound doctrine. Be people who are thinkers, because you will encounter those and just they are not capable of communicating a message they do not understand. And if that means the gospel, I mean, we say the gospel is very simple, and that is true. But the substance of the gospel is deep, and the ramifications of the gospel are, I mean, the Apostle Paul says these things are wider, deeper, higher than we can fathom. And as Christians, that is what we need to present to the world. We need to be thinkers. Rick mentioned Chariots of Fire. The man who produced that, Dave Putnam, is a brilliant man. He's not a Christian that I know of. But in listening to him in an interview once, I was just taken with his aptitude for the situation in the world today. To be able to touch on people and the way they think. He even spoke at length about the church. And I can almost guarantee you that few Christians could have stood in the same room with David Putnam and matched him for content. We are not, and I appreciate that so much about the motto or the creed that this institution carries, and that is to be excellent. But excellence isn't just success, because any one of these projects that we are associated with, that is not the substance of the kingdom of heaven. It is what you are, as Rick said, and integrity, and it's what you are, salt and light. But to be able to project those things, you have to know why you believe what you believe. You have to be people who are concerned with the doctrine of justification. It's an important thing. And I'm not trying to say that much learning has made me think that we should all, you know, speak Greek or be able to parse verbs, but what I'm essentially saying is that it's very disconcerting to be among Christians in this industry and to have them waffling off on one area and the other, and you sit and you think, that is not the substance of this truth. In McGee and me, we're trying to deal with virtues from scriptures and trying to make honesty, humility, pride, all of those issues a part of the fabric of young children's thoughts. But in our show, I mean, I can tell you that there have been many, many arguments and discussions, because we've got to get at the heart of these things. And Christians will not begin to impact their society in any discipline, whether it be the media or anything else, until they are people who are founded in the faith, until they are people that have something to say to the world other than Christian rhetoric. I mean, if you want to watch TV, you can hear guys that will go like this, and they will say Jesus, God, Bible, love, Holy Spirit. They will go on and on. But they will not tell you what the Apostle Paul says. They will not teach you. They will not be able to open your heart to the glorious message of the gospel. And that is why, in the situation you're in, you're to be envied if you're studying the scriptures. You're to be envied if you are really offering yourself to Christ in your mind and your talents. Because God is sovereign. He will, as He did me, He will move you into the arena that you can be used. But He will not do that if you're unequipped. And what we need is a church that is equipped to tell the story. We need a church that will talk about things in our society today, such as abortion, in a way that make it much more relevant and not a political issue. We need to be steadfast in those areas. So, I mean, although I'm somewhat frivolous, it's the nature of my business to some degree. You know, my charge to you, if I can be so bold as to make one, is to continue, if you are, and search your heart to see if you really are. I mean, only God knows why you're here and where you're going and why you want to get there. But if you do, hold fast to the faith and be committed in those things.
Thank you. That was outstanding, man. Now we have some time for a few questions and answers. There's a microphone right there in the middle. I'm going to ask the first question while some of you may come up there. The first question I would have to address to each one of you is, what do you do when someone attacks your values? Robin, maybe first.
I was hoping Ken was going to do some bowling before us. What do you do when your values are attacked? Well, first of all, that's something that's not going to be specific to media only. This might need to come down a little. But I find, and again, if I seem a bit darker than these two guys, it's just my way. If I seem a bit darker than these guys, it's because Ken right now is operating on a project with Christians that is for the church market. Rick is operating in an arena of family entertainment. And that's not to minimize, by the way, the battle that has its own character in their lives, but I'm trying to make what is considered to be, even though it's a low-budget version, in the granddaddy of them all, the feature motion picture, which has to survive for a secular market on no other basis than will people pay dollars to see it. And that is where I think there is a more immediately perceptible sense of hostility toward the values that we hold. And I find that when our values are attacked, it's almost become such a constant daily occurrence that you sort of build yourself a little haven and tried, and you know who you can trust. There are certain dear friends, among whom Ken is one, in the industry that I can share when I'm depressed, that I can share when I have a battle with a particular issue or individual or whatever it happens to be. But all you can do is A, pray, B, run. And I just say pray and run. Those are what I do. And I don't mean run away necessarily, but I mean pray and move, not pray and sit. And the prayer that is necessary in an industry like this, which is, see, if you're going to be a doctor, you're closing up somebody's appendectomy, you don't sew a scripture verse on the incision when you're fitting. If you're a doctor, you want to honor Christ, share him where you can, practice good medicine with excellence and integrity in your dealings. But in the area of communication, where you also have to deal with a whole additional element of what are you saying, the substance of what you're doing is communicating. And James says, let not many of you become teachers, for as such you will incur stricter judgment. You have a responsibility that goes with that. And so many others who have no values or no godly values and are wanting to do things where their motive is money, greed, fame, self-aggrandizement of one type or another, and trying to find the balance where you don't want to sacrifice creative integrity for commercial viability, but you also know that in order to go on to do another project, you have to be commercial enough that somebody's going to want to see this thing. That is the thin line you have to walk. And I believe it can be walked, but not without a great deal of prayer and not without a great deal of self-searching. And that's, you have to be very sober-minded as you go forward in that.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you, Robin. For the sake of time, some of you need to go. Would you like to do a little bit of Bullwinkle, Ken?
No. That usually takes thousands of dollars changing hands. It's a button.
Oh, it's a parking token.
Yeah. Well, Bob, it usually after you say something about the scriptures and then follow it with Bullwinkle. Well, homiletically, that is.
Come on.
Well, only if you'll do Rocky. No, you can't. Crazy. I mean, I've done a lot of auditions, but Jesus, not a bunch of people.
I'll do Rocky if you say something I know.
This is free.
Thank you very much. We're going to allow those of you who need to go to class to leave. And go. I would remind you could sign up for a brief time with one of these men here in a few minutes. Others who could stay, move up in the front here, and we'll just give you an opportunity to ask a few more questions, okay? Thank you.